And away we go. It's a getaway Friday morning. Friday, September the 6th, 2019. First Friday in September of 2019. And boy, does it feel like it outside. A little chilly this morning. Nothing too awful, but a little cooler than it has been on past Fridays throughout the summer. And why wouldn't it be? Summer's a little warmer. Now, I do want to, before we get to our guests, take a few minutes here to mention a few things. Now, our pickup times are Thursday and Friday, today and tomorrow, 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. Now, a lot of people have won zoo tickets and some Wilds tickets over the last couple days, 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. So we're open now, and we'll be open till 1 o'clock today if you'd like to come in and pick up those prizes, 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. for prize pickup. Also wanted to talk a little bit about the Popcorn Festival last night, since we've been talking about it all week long. The parade came off, I think, perfectly fine, and it seems like all of the kerfluffle that was going on prior to the parade kind of dissipated. I don't see much talk about it this morning on Facebook or after the parade last night. The parade ended up being about an hour, which is a lot shorter than it has been in years past, usually running about 2 hours, sometimes even 2.5 hours. But that was one of the concerns I think the new people running the parade had, was to make it a little shorter. And they did. And the parade was good. I was down there last night doing the broadcast for MONN Television. We had a good time, saw the parade from beginning to end, and the school bands were in it, the firefighters were in it, the police officers were in it, the sheriff's department was in it, the normal people. And the floats were nice. So I think we can put all that behind us and now just enjoy the next 2 days of the Popcorn Festival. And there was a picture posted on Facebook this morning of the sky last night, and it was an interesting picture over the Popcorn Festival, because there's usually not that much activity going on in downtown Marion after 7 o'clock, and to see the way the sun had set last night on a little chillier than normal night was a very nice picture, a nice postcard. I believe Alex Sheridan might have posted that picture. But so the Popcorn Festival's off and running, the parade's over that was causing so much controversy, and away we go. Now, this morning was an interesting morning for me because, as most people know, we have moved into a new studio, and I have not put the keys to the new studio on my key ring. Now, all week, that's been fine. I've never forgotten them. Everything's been hunky-dory. But this morning, I left home, never thought about it, stopped and got a drink this morning at a fast food restaurant. Never thought about it while I was in the line. Got all the way down Center Street and was just about ready to turn where there is a detour right now on, I believe that's State Street, for the Popcorn Festival. And just before the point of no return where I could not have gone back, I thought, uh-oh, I don't have the keys to get in the door this morning. So I had to drive all the way back home and get the keys and make it back here. But I did make it back here with about 10 minutes to spare. So everything's okay. But boy, that is annoying when you forget the keys. And after today, I'm going to have to put those keys on my key ring for sure. We have a great day of programming coming up today here on WWGH Radio. We have Charlie Evers coming up 10 to 12 noon today. And the return of the Exchange Club after a week absence. 12 to 1 with Brandy Downs, Charlie, and myself, where we will discuss everything that happened in the prior week. And trust me, there is a lot to talk about. And if at any time over the next 2 hours you have a question about anything, you can always give us a call, 740-383-9944. We love to hear from you, and the calls have been coming in at a much greater rate than normal, which is a great thing to have happen. So I think that's everything I needed to talk about this morning before we get the program rolling with our first guest. Our first guest was here about a month ago, I think it was. He was in the parade last night. He is the Democratic candidate for city council in the 1st Ward here in Marion. It's a pleasure to welcome him back to these microphones and discuss everything going on in the world on this Friday morning for the two-hour remainder of this program, Kai Mead. Kai, how are you?
I'm pretty good. Thanks for having me back.
So what's new since last we spoke?
Well, like you said, we had a parade yesterday that went really well. We're still back to, we're still doing the campaign, still at the doors every day, or as much as we can be, and we're just trying to win this thing.
For people who did not hear the last program, where exactly is the first ward?
So the first ward is going to be the Fair Park area, and then the area, the streets like Jefferson, Presidential Row, Greenwood, that area over there as well.
What gives you the confidence at this point as we get ever so close? What are we, 2 months away now?
Just about, yeah.
Just, I think under 2 months at this point, that you will win this race.
It's just from working, knocking on the doors, talking to as many people as possible. You know, you can't take any election for granted. I always tell people it's a 50-50 shot, so we'll have to see what happens on election day and with early vote. But my confidence in the race just comes from the work that I've put into it.
Now, is it really a 50-50 shot, or does anybody have an advantage? I would think incumbents somewhat have an advantage, but I would guess sometime incumbency could be a disadvantage.
Yeah, incumbency does help sometimes, but, you know, it depends on the job you do. But this is an open race, so that's really why I say it's a 50-50 shot. And, you know, the first ward voters really, they can go either way. So I'm just going to keep trying to earn their vote.
Now, how long have you been involved in politics?
I've been involved in politics since probably 2015, just doing volunteer work, knocking on doors for other candidates, organizing. My start was really with campus organizing, going from school to school to just try to get people to go vote.
And as far as being involved in campaigns, how many have you been involved in?
I would say that I've had a good role in probably two of them. The prosecutor's race being the most recent. 2016 was an interesting one, just because I remember it. There was so much like vitriol, I guess, or hate on both sides going for each other, and I was just sitting there trying to get local candidates elected more than anything. And so you ran into a lot of crazy stuff.
Now, in an election year, obviously you cannot help every candidate within your party. Mm-hmm. So what was your litmus test for choosing the candidates that you would help?
I think that it's not necessarily about me choosing candidates to help necessarily. It's about who reaches out. You want to do all you can to help each candidate get elected, but it's not me sitting there like saying, all right, this election I'm going to help this candidate and not this candidate. It's if you're a candidate and you wanted help, I would help whenever with whatever you needed.
Now, where does that drive come from?
I think the same area from when I'm doing like work with Let's Read 20 or just doing other volunteer work, where you have like a vision of the way you'd like things to be, or the way you know things should be with like our government, for instance, and how great the people of the First Ward and Fair Park are, that you want their government to represent that. And so it's really just a drive to try to make things better.
You know, I was thinking as I was driving in this morning, why have politics become so nasty, even on the local level? And I think this turns a lot of people off.
You know, I'm not really sure. I think people have gotten so focused on the national campaigns that they kind of forget what a good local campaign looks like, and that's just knocking the doors, talking to people, learning what's bothering them, what can we do from a local government perspective to help them, and not focusing on all the nasty back and forth. Because at the end of the day, after the election, that's what matters, is how can you improve the community.
Well, is it the internet that has made this possible? Because in the old days, a local election, certainly in Marion, you did not have TV advertising, so that was not an option. You could go on the radio, but even the people on the radio stations were not going to run a hate-filled spot. The newspaper usually was not going to do anything that was hate-filled. But that's changed a little bit in recent years. We still don't have a television station, and radio stations, I think, still abide by the idea that we're not going to run anything negative. But the newspaper, I have seen some interesting articles that I don't think would have been in there 20 years ago. And I also see them on Facebook. The Popcorn Festival got the brunt of Facebook this year, and that has nothing to do with politics.
I think what a lot of it comes from is sometimes different media outlets build off each what they see from other people or other outlets, and they so on Facebook you'll see where someone can be angry about something, and instead of having to wait till the next time they go on the radio or something similar, they can just post it very quickly, and they don't have to deal with the, like, they don't have to think about it and think about how it's going to affect them and the others involved. And so then when Facebook is filled with that, other outlets might get the lead from Facebook. And so it kind of builds off, each negative post.
I don't remember if we talked about this last time, but I was having a conversation over Labor Day with a group of people who I got together with. And it seems to me, I never got the impression that local politics years ago was either a springboard to something bigger, or sometimes it could have been. I mean, we had Ron Malone, who was the mayor here, who went to do something on the state level. But other than that, if you look at our mayors, Jack Kellogg served 16 years, longest serving mayor, and then just went into retirement. Don Quaintance was here, I believe, for 12 years as mayor, and then he just went into retirement. Doc Brown went into he was an older gentleman when he got the job, and after 8 years went into retirement. It was not a springboard to something else. It was to be the mayor of Marion. Even the city council people, I would be hard-pressed to find a city council person who went on to anything beyond city council, except maybe mayor. They might have ran for mayor. Is it different now? It seems to me, the conversation I was having was people use it kind of like JV politics. This is my door into something bigger. This is my shot.
You know, I'm not really sure. I think that there's two different types of ambition that people have in politics, and one is to drive yourself up the ladder as high as you can go just for the title's sake, and then there's the other kind, and that's the kind that I kind of really pride myself on. It's that you get elected to city council, and then you try to, like, your what you put your pride into is what you can do from that position, not how high up you can go, but how well you can do the job at city council. I feel like there's so much we can do now that to try to figure out where you're going to go up next is kind of crazy, because you have to focus on doing the job right. And I think that too often people who get involved in politics are just thinking about what's the next role I can have, what's the next thing I can run for.
Well, it's interesting because that certainly is not a blanket statement for everybody who's running for office or the people who are in office now. But on Monday, when I was at this Labor Day event, we could pick who has different ambitions and is doing it for a different reason than the people who are really there to do the job. And I think that's apparent to most people who follow city council, and most people, well, would you say most people don't follow city council? I don't know. The meetings are not attended in great numbers. The newspaper does not cover them like they used to. The radio doesn't cover them like they used to. And I think for the most part, people don't know what happens at city council.
Yeah, I think that unfortunately sometimes it takes a big issue to drive the attention towards council. I always think that the more people are paying attention to what their elected officials are doing, the better. But yeah, there's, for instance, the recycling issue with DKMM got a lot of people involved, but typically it's spotty with who pays attention. Thankfully, when election time rolls around, the attention does get a little bit brighter.
Now, I don't know if a lot of people know this or not. I think some people think it's volunteer, but city council members are paid. What is the salary?
I believe it's around $6,000.
$6,000 a
yeah,
year.
Yeah, maybe give or take a few hundred dollars.
So per month, city council is making...
like $500, I believe.
$500 a yeah. month. Do you think there are people who do it for the money? Now, that's not an abnormally large amount of money, but you have a committee meeting. You meet once a week. You know, it's not bad.
Yeah, you know, there could be. You never, I can't be in the head of everybody that runs for city council, but, I'm not 100%, I'm not really sure. You know, some people do, I'm sure there's probably been someone at some point who really enjoyed that check, but I think that anytime you're running for office, you can never do it for the money. You always have to do it just for the impact you can have. And that's where I kind of lean back on that. You either do it for yourself or you do it for the community.
If the check was taken away, do you think the current group and the people who are running, everyone would stay?
You might have a shakeup, I think, of certain candidates running, but I think that it would mostly stay the same.
Do you think that should be a job where you're not paid?
I don't know. I think you could go either way with it. Now, I will say that if it was unpaid, I would still be running, 100%. But you know, I'm not really sure. I will say this: if the city ever needed to, I 100% think that I would be willing to take a pay cut.
Well, $6,000 a year multiplied by, what is it, 9 people on council, 3 at large and 6 wards. You know, that's not a gigantic amount of money, but it's a chunk of change for Marion, Ohio.
Yeah, and I think that it's symbolic, too, of just if we're tightening our belts as a city, whether if we're in an economic downturn or if we're tightening our belts as a government, then I've always said that we all have to be involved. Everybody's got to tighten your belt. You can't hurt one department more than the other. So if we're all taking pay cuts, then that means everybody.
Before we talk about your race and just some other things going on, we do have to start at the top here and talk about the mayor's race because it made gigantic news recently on the behalf of Sue McGowan, who is the independent running. And if you don't know this story, I'm going to try to tin type it here a little bit. Essentially what happened is Sue McGowan wanted to run as an independent. Mayor Schertzer is running as the Democrat. Kevin Norris is running as the Republican. And she had to have her petition in by May, which she did. And she did have the correct number of signatures, and all that was correct. And the Board of Elections certified her petition sometime in early summer, so she was good to go to run as the independent candidate for mayor of Marion. And then in July, there was a deadline that if you wanted to dispute her the candidacy, or anybody else's, I think, you had until late July to do that. Nobody did. That date passed. Then about 10 days into August, I believe it was, somebody from the Democratic Party, very prominent person in the Democratic Party, came in and said that Sue had voted in the May primary as a Democrat. And in Ohio, that makes you a Democrat. That shows you have party affiliation. So she can't run as the independent candidate for mayor. The county prosecutor came in during this meeting and said, I think we need to look at case law and see what this is all about and delve a little further before we take a vote to remove or keep her on the ballot. The Democrats on the Board of Elections decided they didn't want to wait for that. They voted to remove her. The Republicans voted to keep her. And now it's at the Secretary of State, and we await the idea of if Sue will stay on the ballot. And of course, she has said if she's taken off the ballot, she will have some kind of legal recourse. So at this point, what did you make of that story?
I honestly just felt like it was a mess. I don't know what's going to happen. I have no clue. I hope that they come up with the right answer, and I know that that's not a super interesting thing to say, but I think that there's so much that goes into it that no matter which decision you make, you're going to be kind of setting a precedent for how things will go in the future if this were to happen again. So I honestly can't make a prediction on it. I don't know what's going to happen. It's just up to the Secretary of State. I think that they're supposed to come with a conclusion by probably, I think like the 5th or the 6th. So I thought it was going to be
today.
Yeah, today.
We might find out today.
Yeah, we might find out on air.
So, yeah, we might. You never know.
Yeah.
If this comes down to remove her from the ballot, let's put it this way. If she stays on the ballot, there's not going to be a hubbub. It'll just go on as it has went on, and we'll have the election. If she's removed, I'm almost certain there's going to be a nasty backlash from the people who support her, from the... I'm sure she'll have some kind of statement herself, and she's already said she's going to get a lawyer, and I have to believe in good faith that that's what she'll do. So, it could end badly.
Yeah. You know, campaigns... aren't always cut and dry. You know, politics isn't always cut and dry, and elections, I guess, aren't always cut and dry is what I'm pulling away from this. We'll just have to see. The board is no stranger to controversy, it seems.
Well, the two questions that I have that I really don't have answers on, and if anybody has answers, let me know, 740-383-9944. Why is a date set to complain by if that date really means nothing, that you can complain after that date?
Yeah, it's a good point. I don't know where they're going to go with this thing. You know, I know a good amount about elections, but case law is not my forte yet, so we'll just have to see.
The other thing, so you pun on that one. The other part of this that really made no sense to me was, because Sue claims to be an independent, and I think some people are claiming that she's a Democrat, what's puzzling to me is that the Board of Elections vote, which is why it went to the Secretary of State, this could have been handled on the local level, again was a party line vote, an exact party line vote. The Democrats wanted to remove her. The Republicans wanted to keep her. Why? Why would the fate of an independent candidate be a party line vote?
Who knows? There's maybe there's some numbers that they know about as far as polling or something like that that might drive them, or you know, maybe it's just their beliefs. Who knows? Things are always, seem to be always more political than they seem. So I guess we'll find out when the Secretary of State gets back with us.
The paper named the person who made the complaint. I think it is public knowledge, the person who made the complaint. It's a very well-known person in the Democratic Party. It's a person who was on city council for 20 years as a Democrat. Does that look bad? That's the person who made the complaint?
I'm not sure, because a lot of the people who do attend and a lot of the people who are going to be elected naturally to council are going to be either Republican or Democrat, because if you're in attendance, you kind of maybe have a specific issue that drives one way or the other. But I can also understand from the perspective of saying, hey, there's a Democrat from city council making this complaint, which could drive maybe the reasoning for why the Republicans voted the way they did, or the way the Democrats voted the way they did. At the end of the day, I don't know. We'll have to see. But I can understand the optics of it and why that looks a little strange.
Well, I think the optics got worse. Not that this person's not allowed to complain, because they certainly are. They're a private citizen now. They're no longer on city council. But when that person makes that complaint, and then you have a party line vote, that's strange. And that's why I think a party line vote on this becomes very odd, because essentially the Board of Elections are people, and they're also fairly new people. So why that would not be more about the rules of how somebody gets on the ballot and less about what party you're associated with, that's what I can't figure. in this whole situation. And that's why I think if she is taken off the ballot, it's going to have a terrible backlash.
Yeah, absolutely. I hate to just repeat myself, but I feel like the most interesting part of this is just the precedent that it'll set either way, whether you're referring to the deadline or whether you're referring to the primary vote. And so, you know, I think that we'll see the impact of this decision go past this election, and not just involved in this mayoral race, but later down the line as well.
Have the Democrats become aware of the landscape of Marion County in the last 3 years? And by saying that, I say what I've said 1,000 times, is that we've had 3 elections since 2016, 16, 17, and 18. And the only Democrat who was opposed, who has won, was Sheriff Bailey. Every other race where it was a Democrat and a Republican, the Republican has won. And to the degree that in 2016, one of the Republicans who won had to step down. And the things that we're talking about Julie Cagle, that's no mystery. And the things that she had to step down for were common knowledge in the 2016 election. And yet, she won. City Council changed from Republican to Democrat, or from Democrat to Republican for the first time in many years. And also, last time, there was no Democrat who broke 40%. It wasn't even close in either election, Democrat-Republicans. So instead of getting closer than it was in 2016, it's gotten further apart. Are the Democrats aware of that? Is that something they're paying attention to?
I think that you have to always be paying attention to the voters and the messages they send you with their votes. At the same time, you have to keep at it. You have to keep knocking the doors. You have to talk to as many people as you can. Each election's a new chance to get elected, a new chance to make changes to the community in the ways that you see fit, and the ways that the voters want to. You can't get discouraged. You can't just eventually call it quits or anything like that. I think that really the biggest things that you have to do as a candidate is you just have to listen and just get out there and talk to people. And then you can, you know, if it doesn't work out with you and you really put 100% in and you're out there talking to as many voters as you can and it doesn't work out for you, then so be it. But you really have to actually put yourself out there and treat campaigning like it's a full-time job.
Do the Republicans have an upper hand?
I think it depends on the race, and it depends on the demographics of the race.
In these city council races this year, what do you think?
I think that it's going to be, you're going to see a lot of surprises, especially like, for instance, in the 6th Ward. And it's just going to be, we have a lot of good candidates this year, and you're just going to see a lot of, I think, a lot of numbers and a lot of voting swings that you haven't seen in a while.
When you are going door to door, how many people have you touched, talked to in this time period?
So, an exact number, I'm not really sure. I know that I've knocked the ward at least a time and a half, which is kind of weird to say, because there's some streets that I've hit twice, there's some streets I've hit 3 times, and there's some that I'm getting to now for the second time. I would like to say that I've knocked the ward at least 3 times by election day, and then we're going to put out mailers and all kinds of stuff like that as well. But yeah, the number, I'm not really sure, but I do make an effort to, if for some reason that I think that a lot of candidates don't do, is say you knock a street and there's not a lot of people that answer the door, I don't count that as a street knocked. So like if I go knock Jefferson and 5 people answer the door, well, I would be lying to myself and only doing my campaign a disservice to say, oh, well, I knocked Jefferson, so I'll go back the next day and re-knock Jefferson.
What are people saying? What are their concerns, questions? Do they say, yes, I'm going to vote for you because you came to my door? Are they saying, no, I'm not going to vote for you because you're a Democrat? Are they saying, yes, I'm going to vote for you because you're a Democrat? What are they saying?
So you have some people that do just vote party line. And, you know, some people say, well, no, I'm not your party, so, you know, there's nothing you can say to convince me. Or there's some that say, oh, you're a Democrat, and enough said, you've got my vote. And then there's some people who say, there has not been a single person that's came to my door in the last 5 years, and I just because of that, you have my vote. So you really get a mixed bag of people. Sometimes just talking about the issue that they really care about. And the thing is, if you do start knocking early and you do start really being out there talking to people, you actually get you do better as the election goes on, because you know people's issues that they care about, and you're better able to address those.
What are the big issues in the first ward?
So, in the first ward, you've got a lot of speeding going on. People are flying down roads like crazy. Sewers are flooding some, and then there's a lot of car break-ins that are going on. Those are some big issues. But another thing that I think a lot of people just want to see is they want that a sense of community, or a stronger sense of community, through like making sure that the council is attempting to where they can put money towards making it so kids have stuff to do, like improving our parks, improving basketball courts, things like that, and then just being active in the community when it's not an election. One of the biggest things that I've talked about is just saying, you won't see me, or you'll see me more than just in September, or right before an election. I plan on being the councilman of the first ward for the first ward, not just on the shining hill that is City Hall. Like, you'll see me involved in the community. I'd like to do town halls. I'd like to, you know, actually come to the voters and ask them, what do they want to see? What's some things that we could do better? Because right now, that's not the case.
Does character matter when it comes to a politician? Because this is a big question that's been going on for a long time. Or is all forgiven? Because I think you can run for office no matter what you've done in the past.
Well, I think character does matter, just because you have to be able to. I mean, you're going to be a role model for kids. You're going to be people are going to look to you as a representative of the ward, and so, you know, what you do matters, especially when you're not a candidate, because that's when the real test is. Like I said last time, anybody can run for office and be perfect or not make a mistake during that time, but let's look at the past. And that's not to say that everyone, like some candidates, don't ever make a mistake. Some people do, and that's okay. But let's look at the bigger picture.
Is it ever okay to forget the past?
No, you can't forget it. You have to, you know, you can forgive it. You can move on from it. And you can grow from it, but you're doing yourself a disservice if you just pretend like it didn't happen.
Do you think that this has become a more prevalent thing than it has been in the past? Meaning to say that if you had problems before, that you would never make it to the ballot of city council or anything of that nature, but now, doesn't really matter.
I think, like, as we were talking about earlier about social media and everything like that, it's involved more people in politics. And so, you know, I think that all kinds of people should run. I think that if you have a mistake, that should not stop you from getting involved in politics. So I really just think that it diversifies your group of people and it diversifies the ideas. But at the same time, you have to... It makes it so voters are given that extra responsibility of doing their research on the candidates.
Something that's interesting to me is that we have people running for mayor, we have people running for city council, we have people running for auditor, we have people running for these offices. And if you look at some of the people, have they ever attended a city council meeting? Or do they just attend them when the election comes up? Do they have any experience in these positions at all? Do they know what you can even do in these positions?
You know, some candidates have, some haven't. I personally have been going to council meetings when I can since before our previous incumbent. So in 2015, I was at council meetings. You know, I think that it's important to go. There's a lot you can learn from just watching and just sitting there and learning how things work, because you're going to find things that you do agree with, but you're going to find things that you don't, and learn what are some things that I can do on council that can really make a difference. Whereas if you just kind of, you know, jump in late and, or, you know, don't attend a meeting, then you might not know the processes for making improvements. So even if you have the right idea, how you actually accomplish that might be a little bit more difficult for you, because like I said, you have to look back at before the campaign starts. What was this person doing to make me think that they are prepared for the job?
How big a part does money play in a local election?
I would say a fairly big one, just because certain candidates might have a money advantage just because of their background, or certain candidates, because of their party affiliation, might not have to worry about a fundraiser. Whereas, for instance, a lot of the Dems have their own fundraisers and raise their money. And it's not that the fundraisers are a burden or anything like that. I think that it's just you have a more pure democracy and a more pure election if you're going to have that extra money involved that the candidate is raising it themselves, instead of just getting handed like yard signs or getting handed just different campaign gear.
You know, it's interesting because all these signs go out and we see t-shirts and we see buttons and all kinds of things. Is that still important? Is that still a big deal to do that?
I think that sometimes, especially locally, candidates sometimes get lost in the campaign, and they see TV shows or different just different examples of what a campaign looks like, and so they assume that that's something that they need when it's not. There's a lot of data out there that says, you know, t-shirts might be really cool to have, or buttons might be really cool to have, but at the end of the day, how many extra votes does it get you? And because really what you're trying to do is get on city council or get to your elected position to make that change. Because and sometimes people get so lost in the, I want to have my name on this t-shirt, I want to have my name on this button, that they lose track of what's important.
Your family, other people's families, how important is it to get them involved in the election? And also keep them away to a certain degree, because do they become fair game if they're participating in the election?
I always, as far as campaign decisions go, I try to involve my fiance on a lot of it, just because she gives a different insight. I would never involve my opponents or someone else's family in a campaign. I think that that's too far. You know, it's important to, I would ask any candidate that I was working with, or just ever, to really discuss things with their family, and, you know, never just make a rash decision by themselves. But yeah, you can't, I don't think you can, family is ever fair game.
Is it hard to have a fiance and run for office? Takes a lot of time.
It takes a lot of time, but, you know, She's just been ridiculously supportive with everything. And so, you know, if it has been difficult, it has not been through her. Like, she's been fantastic. She's made this a lot easier than it could have been, I think. Whereas, like, she's been understanding of, hey, I have to go knock for, I'll be out for 3-4 hours or something like that. Whereas, you know, other people could be like, come on, this is the 4th, 5th time this week. But no, she's been fine with it.
Is she a political person?
No, and I think that makes it better, because I think that sometimes these people that are in the middle of a campaign kind of might are at danger of losing sight of like what somebody's thinking or what should you do in a certain situation. And she gives a very good perspective of just, I think, the average voter.
What is the best advice she's given you?
I think the best advice she's given me is, well, you kind of already know this, to just when you're at the doors, just be yourself. But she has really hammered it home. Just when you're going out, to just that she would just always like remind me of, as to just, you know, just be yourself, say what like you actually like want to get done. Because I think at the end of the day, that's what voters respond to the best, is just being genuine. And even though she's not very involved with politics, she's always been able to tell, I think, when candidates are a little less genuine than others. And that's what I've tried to be, is just as the guy that you see is the guy that you're going to get.
Do you think there are a lot of phony candidates on the local level?
You know, I'm not sure. There's a lot of candidates I don't know, personally. So, you know, you never want to assume anything about anyone. But you never know. There definitely could be. I think that sometimes there have been candidates in Marion's past who want to run for the title and just climb. But, you know, as far as being phony, I couldn't tell you.
Is there anybody in this particular election coming up in 2 months that you have great concerns about being on city council or being mayor or being auditor?
My opponent. That's it. I would just say my opponent. I think that our Dem candidates are fantastic, so I think that they're the best choice. They're working their butt off. They're doing a great job. But I think as far as, you know, criticizing other candidates' opponents, I think that I'll leave that to them.
So is the only concern your opponent because he's your opponent, or because you have great concerns?
I think that
if he wasn't your opponent, would you have the same concerns?
You know, I'll try not to get too negative on my opponent. I will say that I believe that I'm the most qualified person for the job. I'll say that I'm the most experienced person for the job. And I will say, as far as education goes, I'm the most qualified person for the job. And I think that is where the concern is driven. And I think that when you look at our lives and dealing with, when you look at our whole painting, the whole picture, at the end of the day, I'm the better candidate.
And I don't. We got about 5 minutes left in this hour, and Kyle will stay with us next hour. But for example, we have a lot of city council races. I have Leslie Cunningham, Tara Dyer. That's the one that comes to my mind. I don't know why. But obviously there are others that are going on. No matter who wins those races, obviously you pull for the Democrat. But if the Republican wins, do you go, okay, that'll be fine?
You know, you have to work with everybody. If you really want to get things done, you can't play politics left or right. That's one of the biggest things I hammer home at the doors. It's just, you know, on a council race, it's not as much about do you always vote Democrat or always vote Republican. It's about who's the most qualified for the job. And so you always want, like you said, you always want to pull for the Dems. But if a Republican does win, then you have to be you have to be an adult and work with those people. It's the same as any other workplace. You have to try to get things done.
In your particular race, is that the same philosophy? That it will be okay if he wins, life will go on, and it's okay?
I think that there's a lot of uncertainty with our race as far as how that'll go, just because of the circumstances with the candidates and the circumstances with the unknowns as far as my opponent. But I think that I hope that no matter who wins the first ward race, that Marion is better off for it.
What would you consider to be the unknowns?
I think that because there was a lot of, a new candidate was placed in around May. There's no experience at council meetings or anything like that. And so you don't really know what you're going to get.
What do you think the League of Women Voters event will be like? Because that'll be coming up in about a month.
Yeah. I hope that it's just a positive experience of people giving off their ideas and saying the changes that they'd like to see to the community, and then voters responding with their vote for the candidate that they agree with the most.
Have you ever met your opponent?
Not to my memory.
So that'll be it, the first...
Yeah, that should be the first... Well, no, there's an event at the end of September with the Landlords Association that I believe he will probably be at. That'll probably be the first time. But you never know. Marion's big and small at the same time.
So how do you feel about that? Because, you know, this is an opponent thing. This is a competition thing. This is some things have been said from both sides that are not necessarily the most pleasant things in the world.
Yeah, I'm ready for it. I mean, I always just try to start and finish with the changes that I want to make. Because, and like I'm being a broken record, but like I always say, at the end of the day, if you get elected, that's what you're there for, is to make those changes. Because a year in, you're not going to have that opponent to, you know, go back and forth with. You have to do the job. You have to get things done. And I think that that's what voters will really respond to.
If you do win your race and you end up on city council, what is the first thing you want to do?
The first thing that I would like to do is just address the speeding that's going on. Put forth, just try to work with the administration and get something down. Because right now there's just a lot of non-permanent changes or attempts to end the speeding. And I think that we can make a better effort just because it is a mess. People are flying, going 50 miles an hour through Fair Park, and that's twice the speed limit. And so it's one of the things that I'd like to address right away before someone gets hurt.
Kai Mead, First Ward candidate, Democratic candidate for city council. He'll be sticking with us through 10 o'clock this morning. We're coming up on a 15-minute break, news and weather and all kinds of other good stuff. Back with you in about 15 minutes.
Trump. Donald, how are you?
God, how are you?
Doing very well. What a busy week for you, sir.
I have to tell you, I have not slept in days. I'm very, very excited. This phenomenal convention, probably the biggest star-studded convention.